his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score!
Jones. Watford for the win.
Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
Welcome back to Podcast on the Brink, brought to you by The Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. In many ways, Jordan Hulls is the unlikeliest of Hoosier legends. Too short, too slow, not athletic enough. And yet in other ways, he's the quintessential Hoosier legend. The kid from Bloomington, the sharp shooter, the hardworking kid who may not have the physical measurables, but has all the intangibles that you would ever want. And it's a cliche to say that you can't measure the size of someone's heart. And with Jordan Hulls, it's true. Because heart is what he had, and maturity, and it allowed him to overcome the perceived physical limitations to leave an indelible, lasting mark on Indiana basketball history. And on this episode of Podcast on the Brink, we are very, very excited and honored to talk with Jordan Hulls. We talk with him about his wedding, the wedding scene around Hoosier Nation that he recently got done celebrating and just got back from his honeymoon. We talk with Jordan about two upcoming events that he has that all Indiana fans will be interested in. And then we dive into his career, his post-IU career overseas, which has been extremely successful. And then we spend some time reflecting on the time he spent at Indiana and what he thinks about when he looks back on those times and how he feels about the time that he spent with his teammates and even his own individual achievements as a Hoosier. It's a great conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed participating in it, as I always do when I get the opportunity to speak to an IU legend like Jordan. And we're very excited to share this with you today. So here is our conversation. Alex Bozich joins me on this conversation with Jordan Hulls, and I think you'll all enjoy listening to it. And we are joined on this episode of Podcast on the Brink by a former Hoosier who needs no introduction, Jordan Hulls. And Jordan, to kick it off, I've got to ask you the question that everyone is wondering right now. How's life as a married man?
Well, we're going on a week strong here, you know, a little over a week, and we're having a blast, and we just got back from a honeymoon late last night, so it's back to the real world a little bit. We're not on the beach anymore, but it's been great, and we had a great turnout at the wedding, and it was just an awesome time, and you know, we're ready to start our lives together.
Yeah, well, congratulations on that, man. It was really neat, I think, for all IU fans to kind of be able to watch you kind of go through the process and watch the wedding and, you know, all your ex-teammates sharing that with you. What was that like, being able to share the experience with so many of your teammates that you played with at IU?
Well, yeah, it was an awesome experience and just a testament to how close we all really were. You know, I had guys coming from all over the country just to attend the wedding, and my bachelor party was the weekend before, and everybody made that as well, so it was just really neat to have those guys come back and support me in this huge life decision. Yeah. Cause we really are like brothers for life. And, it's great to have almost all my other teammates, attend the wedding as well. And the coaching staff. And, it was just great to see everybody. Cause since everybody's off doing their own thing, it's harder and harder to see everybody. I haven't seen a lot of these guys in a year and a half. So it was just a great time and really cool experience to see everyone.
Yeah. What's it like when everybody gets together? I mean, what do you guys talk about? Is it a lot of reminiscing about games or times in college? Is it a lot of catching up on how everybody's doing in their career? Like, what's that like? What do you guys talk about for the most part when you're all back together?
Yeah, I'd say it's a mixture of things. You know, we talk about old stories, just going through college, but then we're also wondering what's going on now. What kind of workouts you doing now? How's the family? It's a mixture of everything. We don't just strictly talk about basketball, obviously, because our friendship goes beyond basketball. So that's another cool thing about what we have, is that we're able to share in this. Obviously, we're brought together by basketball, but that's not the only thing that we can relate to. And So we just talked about, you know, life and what's next in the future for us. And, you know, it's a good time just catching up and just talking with friends. Like I said, we don't see each other that often. So when we do, it's a good time.
Jordan, were you surprised at all at kind of how the whole wedding kind of exploded, I guess, on social media there? I don't know. Obviously, you had a chance to look at it as you were going through it, but you know, there was all these a lot of IU fans tweeting, you know, seeing the different pictures of throughout the day. Were you surprised by that? And also just curious, because I'm sure there's a lot of women that'll be getting on their fiancés that they're not going to be doing this. The candy stripe pants at the reception, whose idea was that?
I'd like to take credit for that one, but Aubrey is obviously a huge IU fan anyway. So when we had talked about it, and we didn't want it to be like too over the top, but we thought that was perfect, mixture. And I was surprised. And then I guess I should say, I'm not that surprised because it is Hoosier Nation and we're pretty crazy about our basketball, but the way it just exploded with the candy stripes and just all the wedding pictures and stuff like that. It was just a whirlwind, and, you know, it was cool to see how much everybody was, I guess, keeping an eye on our wedding, I guess, to say. It's pretty cool that people cared that much about what was going on, and, you know, it was the most important day of our lives, and to be able to share it, not just with the people who attended the wedding, but it seemed like everybody, like you said, on social media was also in on it and enjoyed it. I think that's a pretty cool thing to, you know, be able to broadcast our wedding day. That was a fun thing for us.
It was really cool. It was so neat to be able to experience that with you. Now I've got to ask you for some advice. So I actually got engaged last August. Heather and I, we haven't set a date yet, but we're getting ready to go through the process. What advice can you give me about just what to expect, you know, how to navigate through this process and get out on the other side okay? Because obviously you hear all the horror stories, you know?
Right. So I guess I would just say to you, just say yes to everything and try and stay out of the way. You can put your input when you think it's safe, but if you're not sure, I'd say just agree with whatever she said.
Yeah.
The thing with me, like we weren't together, you know, throughout the whole process, pretty much. I was gone, I don't know, out of the 24 months of planning, I was probably gone 15 to 18 months. So we did a lot of Skyping and that kind of thing just to plan for it. But I give her all the credit for how it went, because she did awesome with everything, all the details. There's lots of little things you don't even think about, like what color napkins do you want? What seat covers do you want? Like, paying for all these flowers and, you know, whatever the case is, it's just kind of crazy once you get into it, how much really goes into getting the wedding the way exactly that you want it.
Yeah.
So my advice to you is just to say yes, dear, and tell me where to sign and all that kind of stuff.
And maybe try and get a job overseas.
It is a fun process, though.
Yeah.
What's that?
I said, and maybe try and get a job overseas for the majority of it.
Yeah. I mean, if you can, no, you're going to get me in trouble.
No, I know. I'm kidding.
It was a fun process, even though I wasn't totally into it. I miss all the food tasting and that kind of stuff, but
yeah,
just seeing it from afar and how much effort she put into it, I really appreciated like how hard it is to put on a wedding. So it's a good time, though. I'm sure you guys will grow together and, you know, learn a lot about each other through that whole process.
I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will. So you are not wasting any time jumping right into it, you know, getting back from your honeymoon and then getting right down to work. You've actually got two big events coming up that we want to tell everybody who's listening about. And I want to give you a chance to talk about both of them. So let's start with the one that's coming up the soonest, which is the JH1 Skills Academy, which is July 13th through the 15th at Bloomington High School South. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you'll be working with two different sets of campers, grades 2 through 5 in the mornings and then grades 6 through 10 in the afternoons. Is that right? And how can people get involved in that event?
Yes, that's correct. It's our second year of the JH1 Skills Academy. We're really excited about having people come back. You know, our numbers are looking really good, and that's the goal for us, just keep building each and every year. But the way to sign up and register, you obviously will welcome walk-ups the day of, as long as numbers are permitting. We need to just keep going on the numbers because we're still getting applicants. But the way is jordanhulls1.com is where it's my website for the camp. And then I'll also be selling some instructional DVDs that we did this past summer, over the last two summers, I should say. I made some shooting and workout DVDs that we'll be selling. And it's just a really cool experience. We try to make a unique experience for the kids, learning different drills that, you know, most camps may not be going over. We're just trying to make it different. And, you know, I'm big on having a great staff who loves working with kids and knows the game of basketball and has a passion for helping kids get to the next level, because that's the ultimate goal. I try and use, you know, my story to help relate to the kids, because I'm not the tallest, I'm not the fastest, all those kind of things. And I just want them to dream big. That's my big thing. And, you know, I'm really excited to get that thing going. And, yeah, it's an exciting time. And you know, like you said, it's a busy time just getting back from my honeymoon. So,
And obviously your story is well known. Is there a particular anecdote or a specific memory or story that you tell the kids at this camp that kind of helps to illustrate that idea of yours of dreaming big and, you know, overcoming odds that people think they might not be able to?
Yeah, I mean, just throughout my whole life, I always had to prove people wrong. They always told me I wouldn't be the biggest, or, you know, I wouldn't be fast enough to play, you know, whether that was middle school or high school or going into college and then into the pros. You know, I always had my doubters out there, and then I just iterate to the kids. It's good to have, as long as you're passionate about it, you can do whatever you want, whether that's basketball or being a teacher or a lawyer, whatever it is. If you're passionate about it, give it your all and keep a close-knit of friends around you. You know, embrace your support from your family or loved ones. Just keeping that and staying out of trouble and keeping your head on straight and working hard. I think that's what got me to where I am, is just strictly by getting good grades, staying out of trouble and working my tail off, and, you know, giving God all the glory for all that kind of stuff, because that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's all for. So I'm trying to teach the kids that, and that if you really put your mind to it and you want to achieve something, just work as hard as you can and you can do it.
You know, a lot of us when we were younger probably remember going to basketball camps during the summer. And as much fun as it would be to come back and go to your camp, it's only for up to 10th graders. So so those of us who are older can't get involved, even if we'd want to. But there is a way for everyone else to get involved, which is August 8th, the Eagle Point Golf Resort. Do you want to tell everybody about your golf event? It's the Never Lose Hoop golf event, right?
Right. So Never Lose Hoop is me and my dad. I'm a co-founder. It's a foundation that we put together that we assist kids affected by cancer. I know my dad was diagnosed with cancer going into my senior year of college in 2012, and we saw how much it affected our family with, you know, learning his diagnosis and what are we going to do. You know, so many things going through your mind when you hear the cancer word. So we saw how much it affected us, and my dad is doing really well now, and you know, getting his checks and stuff, and he's fine. But we wanted to give back to families and kids who were going through the same thing in any way that we could. So we put this Never Lose Hoop together, and we do golf outing. We were trying to raise money. Name on the Court by is another company that's helping us out. They make custom prints of Assembly Hall with your name on it. Scott Hopkins is in charge of that, and he's been great with us, just trying to help donate to the cause and helping kids in whatever way we can, whether that's, you know, emotional support, getting them into different programs, whatever the case may be. We're just trying to give back, and that's something that we're really passionate about. And this golf outing is something that we try and get former IU players to come back and play, and you can sign up and come and play with former players, or just come and play with your family, whatever the case is, if you want to give to a good cause. So it's a fun outing. You know, we've been doing it for 3-4 years, maybe 5 years now. So we're excited about it, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, we'll put links to both of those events in the show notes, and encourage everybody that's listening to get involved either one of those events if you can, and obviously support whatever Jordan's doing. But transitioning now a little bit, wanted to ask you about your second professional season. You played in Kosovo. If I read right, you guys won a championship over there. Can you just tell us a little bit about the second season and kind of how things went over there and what it was like to have a successful year?
Yeah, it's always good when you have a successful year in Europe. You know, that's great for your resume. Always building on that, and that's constantly how you get looked at. And so it was a really good year for us. We won the Balkan League, which is the better league of the two that we played in, and we also won the domestic league. So that was really good, and we had a good team, a lot of good players. You know, we didn't lose very often throughout the year, so. Like I said, winning always cures everything. That means the donors are going to give money, then the money, the team gives you money. Like, it's great. Everybody's happy, and it was a good year. I got to play with another guy from Gary McGee, actually, came and played for a couple weeks with us out there. He's from Indiana. Mm-hmm. And then Julian Mavunga came in January, and he played the rest of the season out there, and he's from Indianapolis as well. So it's kind of cool to be able to play with other guys from Indiana who understand, you know, the same type of, you know, we played in the same high school atmosphere and that kind of thing, and understood the game of basketball. So it was fun, and, you know, you make good friends that way. And winning Import Player of the Year in the Balkan League was a huge thing for me, just to solidify, like, all my hard work was paying off and people were recognizing what was happening. So that was a cool experience, and to be able to do that, and winning is really everything to me. So that was awesome.
So your first year was Poland, and then Kosovo last mm-hmm. year, and then next year you're going to be playing in Belgium, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how does that work, I guess, with, you know, because obviously you were successful this year, so is that where you seek a different league to go to? How exactly does that work with kind of changing leagues? And because obviously that's different than what we experience with professional basketball over here as fans. How does that whole process work?
Right. So, I mean, each contract that I tend to sign is 1 year, like, or as far as my career has been, I guess, they're 1 year contracts. So at the end of the year, we evaluate, we see, my agent and I, we see what the best situation for me the following year will be, whether that's, trying to get in a better league. That's constantly the goal. So keep playing well, then you keep moving up in the ranks, moving up in eventually Euro Cup, Euro Challenge, or Euro League. And then that's where you can make, you know, better contract, monetarily, obviously. And, but just playing better basketball is a huge thing for me, and just keep moving up in competition. And, cause I'm a competitor. I love to compete. Obviously playing overseas is a great experience, and, I love seeing the world and that kind of thing, but I'm over there for a job, and that's to compete and win basketball games and, you know, hopefully keep moving up. So that's kind of how it works as far as, we did really well this past year, and we thought it was in my best interest to move farther west and get in the Belgium area, and we decided on that, and it's a great league over there, and, you know, I'll be playing against good players, and that'll only help my resume if I continue to play well and if we win and all those kind of things.
Culture-wise, what was it like living in Kosovo? And then also, as far as the move to Belgium, I guess when you look at the opportunities you have, I guess what was most appealing about going there?
Mm-hmm. As far as living in Kosovo, it's a heck of a lot different than anything we see here. But all the people there were very welcoming, very nice. Everybody spoke English, which when I first got there, I was pretty shocked because their main language is Albanian. But when I got there, everybody spoke English really well, and I didn't have to, you know, learn too much Albanian. I did to be polite, but as far as that goes, like living, I don't need much. So as long as there is food I could eat and, you know, I could sleep in a good bed and, you know, everything worked, it was fine. So it was a good experience, each place I've been, I've learned different things about myself or about other cultures that helps me appreciate the things that we have back in the U.S. And that's a really cool thing, I think, about living abroad for a long period of time, is that you see so many different things that we take for granted, as far as like running water for 24 hours, you know, or something like that. it's pretty humbling to be able to live through that and then come back to the States and, you know, be really thankful for what we have. So I'd say that's the coolest thing about living over there. As far as why I chose Belgium, it came down to a Belgium team and a team in Italy. But we felt that the Belgium was a great fit for me. I was going to play the point guard. I was going to be able to play a lot and help contribute to winning and playing for a good coach, playing for a great league. And also the opportunities for my wife, Aubrey, to possibly get a job with some way or another with some nursing. She just graduated from nursing school. So she's going to be taking her boards at the end of this month. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to find something in Belgium, and there's some great opportunities through different connections that hopefully will work out. And if she can get anything, whether that's volunteer or working anything, she just wants to practice what she just took 2 years of school for. So that was a huge thing for us as well.
Yeah. You know, at the end of every season, we see guys that are maybe on the fringe of being a first-round NBA draft pick talk about, you know, should I stay, should I go? And one of the things that's always discussed is, well, if you don't get drafted, you can just go overseas. And now that you've had 2 years overseas and really understand how the process works, how would you kind of counsel someone in terms of what that's like as a choice? It, you know, and obviously each situation is different, but just in general, what would you tell someone who's in college about what the experience is like?
About playing overseas, you mean?
Yeah, about playing overseas.
Okay. Yeah, so like my ex-high school teammate, D. Davis, he signed an agent and he's going to, you know, keep playing basketball. So I told him to reach out to me whenever he needed, you know, some guidance or any help, because it's when you decide to go play abroad, it's awesome because you're playing basketball for a living and, you know, that's your dream. You're going to get paid to do that. And it's awesome. And you get to see the world, but it's not all like a lot of people just think you go over there and it's like the best time of your life, but it's really hard. It's a grind. You know, you're over there by yourself unless you get a wife or, you know, something like that, but you're gone from your families and what you're used to the last 23 years of your life. And then you're just thrown into a completely different culture and you have to learn, you know, some new language. You have to learn everything about what they do in their city. It's just, it's a awesome experience. Like I just explained, but it's not the easiest thing in the world because you're just thrown into something completely different. And I guess my advice is just to take it all in and know that at the end of the day, everything's going to be all right. And you have to remember that you're playing basketball for a living and you have to be thankful for that. But it's a lot easier said than done because it does get hard. You know, you have a lot of downtime as far as you go to practice and you come home, sleep, eat, and then you have another practice for another 2 or 3 hours. And then you go home, eat dinner, and then go to sleep, and then you do it all again the next day. Lots of practicing and that kind of stuff. But it's a great experience though, and you learn a lot about yourself, especially my first year, because Poland was the first place I'd lived in for an extended amount of time other than Bloomington. So I was kind of thrown in the fire, and I learned a whole lot about myself, and you kind of grew up a little bit, and it's cool from that standpoint.
You know, and you played high school basketball in Indiana, where the crowds are the craziest, and then you played college basketball in the Big Ten, where the crowds are the craziest. How would you compare the fan support and the crowds that you experience now in compared to what you grew up with and what you played with in college?
Yeah, well, Indiana basketball is a little bit different than most, even in the United States. But I will say in Europe, both teams that I've played for, all the fans have been very passionate about their basketball teams. It's not necessarily in numbers like 17,000, but it would be for big games. It's sold out every game, and guys and girls there are just going insane. It's a different kind of passion. You know, you see the soccer fans over in Europe, you know, going crazy with the flares and stuff in the stands. Like, that's what we have in our games. There's flares in the stands going on. There's, you know, loud drums, there's horns, there's everything. And it's a different kind of atmosphere, but it's really fun, obviously, playing on your home court in that environment. So I've been very impressed with how passionate Poland and Kosovo have been about their basketball.
Now, you've also got coming up this month, I think it's called the basketball tournament, where you're going to be teaming up with some of your former teammates and some other college guys that IU fans might be familiar with on a team called the Armored Athlete. Have you started preparing for that? And when does that get started?
Yeah, we play July 18th, I believe, that Saturday. We got a bye, so I think we play that Saturday. But I've been in contact with some of the guys and, you know, the coaches and stuff, and just it'll be a fun experience to be able to play with Will and Christian again and some new guys that I know of that I haven't played with, and a chance to win some big time money is always a good incentive. And the way it came about, I just kind of, Will asked me about it. He had been approached about it, and Will was kind enough to reach out to me, see if I'd be interested in playing. When I heard there's money involved and there was nothing that we had to do in order to enter the tournament, and I was like, all right, yeah, let's do it. Playing ball, you know, it'll be a fun time. And I'm excited to get that going, and just another thing to add to my crazy schedule. So it'll be a good time, and I'll be interested to see how Will and Christian play, because I haven't played with them in, you know, 2 years, really. So it'll be fun.
Hey, what's Sheehy like in like a pickup game environment? You know, because we've seen him on the court and he has such an edge. Does that edge just get unleashed when it's not, you know, televised in front of 15,000 people?
Oh yeah. Will, you want Will on your team in open gyms, that's for sure. That's why you love playing with Will and why he was so good at IU for us. Like, you never know exactly what he's going to do, but, you know, he's going to play hard and he's going to bring that edge that, you know, he doesn't care what anybody else thinks. He's just going to go out there and play. So definitely in open gyms, it gets heated with Will out there, which is fun.
You know, I think as we all watched your group come through, and especially your final 2 years, we all knew that we were watching a special group, you know, that had kind of been hardened by the early tough times and then experienced the success late. As you're now getting further and further removed from your time at Indiana, is your perspective on that experience changing at all as you look back on it and reflect?
Yeah, I mean, when you're going through the process, you don't really take it all in that how special a group that we had. Like, we understood that we were really good and we had, like, you know, a really good chance of going all the way, and we understood that. But now, like you said, looking back, as I'm getting farther removed from, you know, my playing days at IU, it's very evident that we were very special. We had all the pieces. We had, you know, good team chemistry. We had everything. So it's kind of cool to think about it now and just realize, like, I got to be part of something so great. After going through those first 2 years and then seeing it all pay off, I know we always talk about that, but really, like, whenever I have to explain to, I don't know, a teammate abroad, I try and explain that, like, we went through this and then we did this, so I know anything is possible, and as long as you do the right things and get the right people together. So it's definitely a cool thing to be able to look back and realize how great we were.
Do you ever look back and wish, like a lot of people who have done when they come to IU, they're competing for Big Ten titles all 4 years and, you know, making the tournament all 4 years. Do you ever look back and wish that you had those opportunities all 4 years, or was there a lot of value in those first couple of years really trying to rebuild something that had been broken?
No, like, definitely looking back at it, I wouldn't have changed anything, because I think going through those first 2 years and not, you know, seeing any benefit from all our hard work and practices and, you know, playing our butts off in games and not winning, I think that gave us a huge edge and a chip on our shoulder that we were just so through with losing all the time that we wanted to make a change, and we had all the right pieces, all the right guys with the right mindset. Everybody bought into what their role was and didn't care as long as we won basketball games. And looking back at it and even going through it, you know, those first 2 years, I was, you know, I didn't know what to do, just because I'd never lost that much in my life, but I knew that I had chosen IU for the right reasons, and it was all going to work out, and the last 2 years paid off for sure, and I wouldn't have traded it for anything just because I think I learned a lot about myself, not just me. I think everybody, if they answered the same question, they'd say the same thing, that you learn a lot about yourself, how far you can really push yourself, and if you really come together as a group and have the same goal in mind, that you can accomplish great things. So I think it was a great experience to be able to go through that.
Yeah.
Definitely looking back at it.
You know, and it's interesting when you look back on your career, because you really, for your first 3 years, you really entered each season without much expectations. I mean, I think people, we sometimes forget, mm-hmm. you know, your junior year, that team didn't come in with the big expectations. You guys kind of arrived a year right. early, and then you had the big expectations that final year. And, you know, to a certain extent, there's some parallels with this year's Indiana team, where the last couple of years, they haven't really had the big preseason expectations. And now this year they do. And is there any advice that you would give to this year's team just generally about how you go from, you know, kind of not having those expectations to now all of a sudden you're a top 10 team, you're expected to compete for the Big Ten? What the difference mm-hmm. in mindset that you need to compete effectively when that happens?
Yeah, well, I think what made us really good our final year is that we didn't give in to that target on our back. We worked just as hard as we did the first 3 years. You know, I think that's why we were really good, is that we didn't, obviously we knew that everybody was looking at us and that we were number one and all that kind of stuff, but we worked just as hard. We wanted to stay at the top, and that, I think if this year's team can keep the mindset of, well, we have something to prove still and not even worry about the expectations, that I think that'll help them out in the long run, just because I mean, if you constantly put that pressure on yourself, then that, I don't think that's good for you. But just going in and working as hard as you can each and every day, like you have been the last 3 years, I know that's what helps me personally. I viewed it what we did as like a job. You know, we were on business trips all the time, and that's kind of how I view things, and I think that helped us out.
Was that a lot of, you know, you mentioned how you viewed that. Did that kind of maturity, did that come a lot just internally from the guys you had? Or did Coach Kring treat that season differently at all with the way that the expectations were different? Or was it a combination of both?
I'd say a combination of both. Obviously, Coach knew and we knew of the expectations that were placed on us, but I think he did a good job of keeping our heads level and just focus on one game at a time, doing those kind of things, and not looking too far ahead, because that was our job. Every night we had to go out in there and win a basketball game, and I think everybody was mature enough to do that, and it carried over, like I said, from those first 2 or 3 years of going through those, not having those expectations. I think having that chip on our shoulder just carried out through that season as well.
What's it like going back to Assembly Hall now? I mean, a place that you grew up going to, but now you're an alum. You created so many memories there. What's that like, being back now after your career is over?
Yeah, well, I wish I could come back for a game. I really want to be an alum and come watch a game, but since playing overseas, I haven't been able to do that. But now that they're working on it, I haven't even been in there this summer at all. But it's pretty cool thing to go in there and see your banner up there that you worked so hard for. And obviously we wish we would have had another banner on the other side, but it's pretty humbling experience and feeling, I guess I should say, when you walk in there and you just remember all the hours and hours you put in the gym for practice and just shooting. And it's kind of surreal just thinking back, like it went during going through it. It didn't seem like it was going fast, but now I'm in my third pro year now, and it's crazy to think about it when you get down to it.
Yeah. All right, now I'm going to ask you a question here as we get ready to close up that might make you uncomfortable, okay? Because I know that you're the ultimate team guy, but you know, you look at your career and you're 27th in points, you're 12th in career assists, you hit a school record 58 straight free throws, you played in more games in an Indiana uniform than any other Hoosier. And I'm curious, looking back on your individual achievements specifically, which one are you the most proud of?
Which one am I most proud of?
Yeah.
I'd say playing more games than any other player at IU is pretty, like, I'd say that's a pretty cool thing. Being a kid from Indiana, from Bloomington, watching IU my whole life, I'd say that's a pretty cool accomplishment. To be able to say that, I don't know if a lot of people even knew that, but I think that's a pretty cool thing to be able to say that. It's kind of surreal. Like when I heard that stat, JD Campbell told me that, I was like, there's no possible way that I'm that guy, that I did that. But I'd say that's pretty cool. Obviously shooting and all that kind of stuff and being really efficient my senior year. But I'd say that has to be the top thing in my mind that I'm most proud of, because that's pretty cool to be able to say that. Out of all the greats that I've played at IU, it's pretty neat to be able to say that.
It is. I mean, it's a great stat, and I think, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that it surprises you, because I think for so many of us, you are the perfect guy to have done that. You know, grow up in Bloomington, kind of against the odds, and then to do that, it's a great story, and I think that's, you know, hosting this camp that you're hosting, it's such a great example for the young kids, like you said, to see, hey, if you want to achieve something, you put your mind to it, you work hard, which is exactly what you did. And that's why I think, you know, you are such a beloved figure in Indiana basketball, and it just grows and grows. I think the further we get from your career, actually, because people appreciate even more what you did. So thank you for setting such a good example for everybody.
Well, thank you. I mean, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have wanted to do it anywhere else. You know, it was a great 4 years, and obviously I love Bloomington with all my heart. Hopefully I'll end up back there and raise some kids, and maybe there'll be some Hoosiers one day. And as long as I get my athletic ability, not my wife's. No, I'm kidding. I'm not athletic, obviously. But no, I really appreciate it. And, you know, Hoosier Nation's been great, so I can't thank enough. And hopefully as years pass, people still remember that senior year of ours and what we did. And that's the main thing.
Yeah.
It'd be cool.
I don't think anybody will forget those teams. Those were memorable teams. No question about it. Well, Jordan, thank you very much. Again, the Skills Academy is July 13th through the 15th at Bloomington High School South. The golf outing Never Lose Hoop is August 8th, and the website is jordanholes1.com for all the information. Jordan, thank you so much for taking the time. Hopefully we can talk again soon.
No problem. Thank you for having me, guys.
And that concludes this episode of Podcast on the Brink. Once again, the website is jordanholes1.com. That's where you can go to get all of the information about the events that we discussed. And we appreciate you listening, and we will be back next Wednesday with another brand new edition of Podcast on the Brink.